You're listening to filmmusicsite.com. This is Composer Talk. Hi everybody, welcome to a new Composer Talk. My name is Tim Hormans and I'm your host here at www.filmmusicsite.com. Today I'm talking to composer Matthew Margeson. He's an American composer and he's originally from New Jersey. And he began studying classical piano at a very early age. He attended the Berklee College of Music in Boston, where he studied contemporary film music along with honing his skills as a pianist, performing in every state on the Eastern Seaboard. Matthew relocated to Los Angeles in 2003 and was invited to start an apprenticeship position with Klaus Badelt. In 2005, he took the position of Chief Technical Engineering for composer James Dooley at Hans Zimmer's studio Remote Control Productions in Santa Monica, California. And in 2010, Margeson completed his first studio feature, Skyline, for Universal Studios. The score led to a nomination for the BSO Spirit Revelation Composer Award at the Úbeda Film Music Festival in Spain. In fall of 2012, Matthew spent 3 months in London to do musical arrangements for Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows. And this summer, he's written the score to one of the biggest blockbusters of this year, Kick-Ass Number 2. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks, Tim.
Now, how did you get in touch with composer Klaus Badelt and start your job in Los Angeles?
I moved to Los Angeles from the East Coast of the U.S. about 10 years ago, which was about 2003. And, it was kind of one of those just lucky things of being at the right place at the right time. And it was kind of, friend of a friend of a friend, and decided to go and visit Klaus, pay him a visit at his studio, and just kind of, hung around and started interning for him. And it was just kind of, there wasn't really a solid way. It just kind of happened by, a couple people. And like I said, being at the right time at the right place.
Now, when you started out studying music, was your initial goal to become a composer for writing music for film?
I don't think so. My grandmother actually had this old Lowry church organ in her home, and it was just something that I started, funking around on when I was about 3 or 4 years old. And, when I turned, 5 or 6, my folks thought it'd be a good idea to start, some lessons. And no one in my family had really any musical background, so it was... So it was a little bit of a fluke that it, the interest stuck with me. And I guess it wasn't until a couple years later that, the first time I saw a live orchestra that I kind of knew that this was going to be part of the recipe forever,
Mm-hmm. Now, when you start working at remote control studios, you worked on films such as Pirates on Stranger Tides, X-Men First Class. Now, how big was your involvement in this course?
With some of those other massive productions, the ones that involve just like layers and layers of recording and overdubs and tracking, we, sometimes depending on the time constraints of the film, we'll work in teams where one guy is, writing most of the musical thematic material. And, I might be helping out with adapting that to a specific scene or stretching things or, compressing things and help editing to make things, fit for other characters and variations of themes. So it's a big kind of homogenous process. I can't really say, I did 10% of the score, 5% of the score, 20% of the score. It's there's multiple people's fingerprints on different parts of the music in the film.
Now, working on these films, did that have an effect on your composer skills?
Yeah, I think as a, spending the past couple of years and kind of helping out a bunch of people, when it became crunch time or when, they just needed a little bit of extra manpower, I think there's something really valuable to that because, every person, every composer has a different way of looking at music and has a different way of looking at characters and story development and even, looking at a scene and ways of saying, I want to play the scene from this perspective or that perspective. There's something to learn from everybody, just as, when you're studying composition, you might, learn a certain technique from Shostakovich or a certain technique from someone, of a completely different stylistic realm. and that's kind of how we progress, I think, is, you know, by, you know, there's all this stuff out there and taking it and modifying it and adding new things and coming up with your other thing, with your own new things. You know, it's a long process of taking all that and kind of mixing it together to make it your own.
Mm-hmm. In 2010, you wrote a score to Skyline. That was your first studio feature. Can you tell us something about that experience? Because then, at that moment, it was up to you to create the score.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was definitely a real learning experience for me, because in the world of doing additional arrangements and, you know, helping other guys, you know, finish on time and making it the best that they can be, you're not really in the front lines. And so when you are the lead composer on a film, you're the one that's having the conversation and the dialogue with the director or producer or whoever the filmmaker may be. And, you know, sometimes you're put on the spot and sometimes you have to think quickly. And sometimes, you know, they don't absolutely, you know, love what you've done. So you have to go back and do revisions. And it's not, you know, there's a little bit more on the line because it is your name on it. So, you know, dipping my feet into those waters was definitely a learning experience, and learning how to, you know, or trying at least to sell what I had to present, you know, because it's, you know, you're selling your music and selling your ideas and trying to incorporate that in, you know, the soup that becomes the story.
Now, for Skyline, you did not have to deal with one, but with two directors. There was Colin and Greg Strauss. How was it to work with them? Because their background was more a technical, visual effect background. How was their intention and their look on music for film?
You know, I don't think it ever became a very big problem dealing with two different people. You know, A, they are brothers, and B, I was lucky, you know, I could see where it could be a problem dealing with two different people if their vision is completely different, or if there's, you know, so to speak, if there's more than one cook in the kitchen. But Greg and Colin definitely had one singular vision, so it was kind of like dealing with two halves that make up a whole. I never really had to let them decide what they wanted. They always kind of had, you know, good direction for me to go in, and, you know, they knew what they want from the start. So it was it wasn't that big of an initial dealing with both of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, recently you've written the score to one of the most anticipated films of this summer, Kick-Ass Number 2, a film directed by Jeff Wadlow. You wrote the score together with Henry Jackman. Can you first tell us something about the story of the second film?
The story of the second film, without giving too much away, is, you know, it's really a revenge story for the people that know the story for the first film and how the first comic ends. You know, the character Red Mist's father, who's the mob boss, Frank, is killed by Kick-Ass. And in, you know, one of the last scenes of the first one, you know, Chris, mm-hmm. who's the superhero Red Mist, finds this out and basically says, you know, this is now my new mission, is to seek revenge. And so, you know, I think at its core, this new movie is kind of singularly a revenge film. There are a lot of other side stories and journeys, and, you know, Hit Girl, Mindy McCready, you know, has her story in it, which is a really potent one in the film. But I think, you know, if you're going to throw all the characters and say, what, you know, what is this film about? It's truly a revenge story. And, you know, what's going to happen? Is revenge going to happen? Are the superheroes going to be able to defend Kick-Ass and so on and so forth?
Now, how did you start this project?
I actually was slightly involved with the first film, as there were four listed composers on the first film, and just through a series of chaotic events at the time, I ended up doing a couple last-minute cues for Matthew Vaughn, which he really liked. And, you know, they wanted to have Henry Jackman had written a beautiful theme for the first film, the Kick-Ass theme, which, you know, I think everyone from the beginning had decided, you know, there's no need to go in a different direction for Kick-Ass. We have his theme, we have his colors, we have his sound palette. And, you know, so they wanted to get Henry back on the project, you know, because he had contributed such an integral part of the first film. And I think, you know, my contributions from the first one, as small as they were, you know, both Henry and Matthew decided to, you know, let's bring me on board to see if I could add my flavor to the recipe as well.
Now, and how did the collaboration went between you and Henry Jackman?
It's really great. I've worked with Henry on a couple of his films, so we have a really, really great working relationship together. And one of the beautiful and convenient things about Henry and I collaborating on this is that our writing studios are very, very close to each other. I mean, I could get to his studio in a matter of minutes. So, for me to bounce ideas off of him and for him to bounce ideas off of us, it was very easy, because sometimes, you're working with people in other countries and or you're working with people across LA, and it could be a 45-minute drive. And Henry and I are able to, quickly, run to each other's writing studios and just say, what do you think of this idea, and kind of bounce ideas, like I said, off each other. And it makes for a very fun working day.
Did you divide the workload for this film, or was this a total collaboration that you wrote all things together?
It's hard to say exactly. Henry did this or I did this, and it wasn't necessarily a where we both worked on every single cue. I would say that however the work was divided, Henry and I definitely there was a constant open lines of communication. Even if he was working on one cue or if I was working on one cue, it wasn't, where I would do the first half and he would do the second half or something like this. It was more, let's play each other things and collaborate in such a way where, just our conversations could influence what each other was doing, and that's how we also keep it to sound like one score and not like it's coming from, two different people.
Now, as you already said, the themes or a few of the themes of the first film are coming back for the second one. And now, how was it for you guys to further develop them and expand them for the second film?
I think as far as the Kick-Ass theme goes, we have the actual melody of the Kick-Ass theme is the same, but we have we were able to expand upon that both harmonically and also orchestrationally. We wanted to give this film a little bit of an edge, and we wanted to give it another layer of grit because it is the sequel, so we're not listening to the same thing as the first one. So we actually have a lot of more contemporary instruments playing along with the orchestra in this one. We have layers and layers of guitars and bass and drums, and there's a real sense that the orchestra for some of the score is just another band member, kind of either being acting as the rhythm guitar or whatever the function may be. And so we were able to kind of add new colors that way, in a way.
And what about the theme for Red Mister, the person who becomes let's just say out the word, the motherfucker in the film.
Yes.
So how who dealt with his stuff?
That again was it was an idea that I had originally had, and it was a long conversation with the director and the approach that Matthew Vaughn wanted to take, and just as importantly or more importantly the director Jeff, the direction that he wanted to take. And we tried a couple different things at first, and we were eventually having a conversation about the fact that we have to play Red Mist from his perspective. He thinks he is the baddest supervillain on the planet, so we have to make him feel like he's got, the Imperial Army behind him. So once we did that, there was a couple idea seeds that I had laid, and then, of course, we went back and forth with Henry and I, and played stuff for Jeff, and played stuff with Matthew, and eventually molded it into, the fruition was just this massive kind of, the best way to put it is Eminem meets Darth Vader, which was what we wanted to accomplish. What is Chris listening to? What were him and his friends listening to after school? And also from his perspective, how big and massive and bad does he think he is?
But what I really like when I was listening to the soundtrack is that the Red Mist theme works really well with the Kick-Ass theme, because at the end of the soundtrack you do a kind of battle within these two teams at the big fight sequence, and I thought that really they blended good together.
Thanks. That was actually a very conscious thing that or a very conscious idea that we had thought of even before we started writing is we have these chords, which were the Kick-Ass chords, which are very, very popular chords. I mean, if you listen to the radio, you can find dozens of songs that are out now that use the same four chords over and over again, and they work really well. The Beatles use them. I mean, it's been popular music for you know, decades now. And you know, the idea was to be able to use this harmonic DNA to kind of create the world, no matter whose character we're talking about. So, you know, these chords could be played over Red Mist's new theme. It could be played over Mindy's theme. And so that way it made it easy for them to be interchangeable throughout scenes. Like, for instance, one of the final battles where, you know, you really do have to cut back and forth between thematic material. It made it easy if, you know, they're at the core, they're all kind of harmonically based on the same, you know, motifs.
Before we continue this interview, let's first listen to some music from the film Kick-Ass 2. This is Justice Forever, music from the upcoming soundtrack of Kick-Ass 2, music written by Matthew Margeson and Henry Jackman. Said there's a lot of drum and bass and contemporary sounds in the score. Now, how did you record the score?
You know, recording the score was actually a very multi-step process. When I'm writing and when Henry's writing, we're constantly also, you know, it's not like we're sitting there and writing and then we're done writing and then we're going to record and then we're done recording and then we go to mix. We're constantly recording, constantly writing, constantly producing, constantly going back and, you know, checking what we did and changing what we did and listening with fresh ears. So, you know, the elements that made up a lot of the score are, you know, there's orchestra at the bass, which we recorded a 50-piece orchestra at Warner Brothers Studios. And, you know, we had multiple guitar sessions, multiple bass sessions, multiple drum set sessions, percussion overlays, and we kind of do this throughout the whole entire process. That way, you know, by the time has run out, we've got, you know, pools and pools of audio and different takes and different tracks to pull some, you know, to pull from and assemble what we want to be the final product, you know. And like I said, it's a lot of hours of just going back and listening and tweaking and maybe muting one thing, which is going to make, you know, a difference 5 bars later, because then, you know, we get change and that kind of thing.
Now, the film will be out in August. On August 20th, La La Land will also release a physical album for Kick-Ass 2. It will also be available digitally, iTunes and Amazon stores. Now, what's coming up next for you?
Next, I'm actually working right now in the middle of a PlayStation 4 game, which I'm actually, it's kind of a big secret, so I'm not allowed to, at this time, talk about the title of it. But that will be, you know, a game that comes out in the latter half of the year when the PlayStation 4 is released. I'm just about to start an independent film called The Curse of Downer's Grove, which is kind of a teenage thriller that, you know, honestly, I'm not exactly sure what the release date is.
All right. Now, to end the interview, I have three short questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite score that you've written or your favorite project that you've worked on?
Ooh, that I've worked on? Wow, that is a loaded question. there's a small there was an action film that I wrote a bit of music for. It was one of Henry Jackman's scores, called Man on a Ledge a couple years ago. And I think it's a really the movie didn't have a massive release or anything, but I think the score is really great, and I think there's a lot of good ear candy in there. It's something that I'm proud of. It's not the regular thing that you listen to every day.
Okay, what's your favorite score of another composer?
Again, a tough question. I can't narrow. I would say what am I listening to a lot lately of? I think in the past couple of years, Mr. Powell's How to Train Your Dragon score is just, a work of art that always needs another listen. It's really great.
All right, and who's your favorite composer of all time?
Favorite composer of all time, I would have to say Bach.
Okay.
The one who made it all possible for us.
All right. Thank you very much for the interview, Matthew, and I wish you the best for the future. And good luck with the upcoming Kick-Ass 2 movie.
Thanks so much, Tim. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right.